The following is a paid program. 1590 WAKR and its owners, the Rubber City Radio Group, are not responsible for its content.
Money Talks, the show that gives you the tools to navigate a challenging economy, help you build and protect your wealth, and provide timely news and information to manage your money. Here's the host of Money Talks, Richard Peterson, president of Capital Financial Group on 1590 WAKR.
Well, good Saturday morning to you.
Good Saturday morning. I didn't know how to act today. You know why? Because it's not raining. I was like, what? What is this thing? This big orange thing in the sky. Yeah. I don't know what to do with that. Yeah.
So it is nice to have nice weather. You know, it's just, what a weird, weird summer. Even looking forward to the weather outlook, you know, no 90s, no hot weather. It's just, it's been strange.
I will
say,
personally, I kind of like that.
Oh, I do too.
I'm not really a big fan of the hot weather, but, you know, I know it's just unusual, yeah. And I think that if you were trying to get some kind of gardening in, it's just been literally a wash,
you know? Very strange. And strange, nonetheless, is really what this week was all about.
Yeah, the stock market glitch thing.
Oh, it's just all kinds of things going on.
Yeah.
But good morning, everyone. I am your host, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. This is Money Talks, and thanks for joining us on this Saturday morning as we take a look at the markets. And what a week for all kinds of things that we're going to touch on. We take a look at the New York Stock Exchange that went down for 3.5 hours, the problems with Greece, the problems with China, the real big fall in oil earlier this week, the bonds with Puerto Rico. I mean, the list just goes on and on. As we look at the Dow, that finished up yesterday, 211 points, closed at 17,760. Yes, that still means that the Dow is negative since the beginning of the year. As we look at, here we are at July the 11th, the Dow is down a third of a percentage point for the year. The NASDAQ closed up 75 points yesterday, under that 5,000 mark at 49.97. It is positive for the year, whereas the S&P 500, which was up 25 points yesterday, closed at 20.76. Well, it's now positive by 0.9%, less than 1%, because as we look, it took yesterday to get it back into the black for the year, because it also was negative for the year. We take a look at natural gas, which was up 4 cents, close to $2.77. Oil, the West Texas Intermediate, like I said earlier in the week, Monday and Tuesday, dropped 11% over those 2 days. In fact, Tuesday it was down better than 8% for the day. It edged up, it was down yesterday 4 cents, closed at $52.74. Whereas the Brent crude was up 12 cents, closed at $58.73. Gas futures were up a penny, closed at $2.02. At the pumps, I saw everything from $2.65 to $2.72 for a gallon of regular unleaded. Gold was down $1.30 yesterday, closed at $1,157.90 an ounce. Silver up 6 cents, closed at $15.54. The VIX, which just about hit 20 this week, was down $3.14. And in the bond market, we see that the 2-year sits at 0.63%, the 5-year at 1.66. The 10-year came back from 2.17 to close at 2.40 yesterday. That's 2.4%. And the 30-year now sits at 3.19%. So much this past week. As we take a look, you know, where were the big headlines? What was the biggest factor? Well, of course, I think Greece really filled the headlines.
Can I just say, Opa?
Yeah. As last Sunday, they got the vote, the referendum vote. Here we are this weekend. They did submit to the parliament last night and got it approved for their proposal that they're going to give to the European Union. Don't know if they're going to vote on that today or if they're going to actually have their full meeting tomorrow. Certainly, it's going to be an interesting weekend to see. Does Greece stay or does it go? I think many of the experts out there are just at this point, it's a flip of the coin. Something tells me, my gut feeling is, that somehow, some way, they will work this out, although, again, kicking the main responsibility down the road, as they have continued to do. We have the problems with China and their markets. Certainly, the Chinese are learning what the word margin means in their accounts, as we saw a considerable dive. In fact, the Chinese markets are down almost 30% from a month ago. But if you kind of look at that in relation, they still up are still up 10% for the year, whereas our Dow is negative for the year. And certainly over the past year, you've made some sizable money in the Chinese market. And again, does this have any relationship to what the actual economy is going on in China? Not really, but there is all kinds of effects coming from the market fallout. Then we have the Puerto Rican bonds, which we were looking for concerns of a default where they made their payments, and so certainly they have some problems going on there. The Puerto Rican crisis is certainly much bigger in relation to dollars than what is the Greece crisis at this point. You know, Greece was supposed to make a $1.8 billion payment at the end of last month. The Puerto Rican bonds total $72 billion. And a lot goes into what would happen if Greece were to leave the European Union. Well, geographically, it certainly is a very important country when it comes to that particular area there. And if they were to leave, there's been a lot of speculation this past couple of weeks. If they were to leave and then actually get some monetary help from Russia, then does Russia use Greece as a strategic geographical point? Certainly a lot going on there. Germany, which has been very very fiscal in their conversation with Greece of not wanting to give any type of trims or haircuts, as they call it, classic haircuts. Certainly you look at that situation, and Germany has been one of the biggest benefactors of this whole situation, because when the euro got weak, Germany being a big export country has benefited significantly from this. Greece has not so much because they're mainly an import country. But, you know, as we take a look at it, I really feel that they will get this worked out. I feel bad for the people of Greece, though. I mean, those poor folks, no matter what happens, they're going to feel the brunt of this one way or the other. Whether they stay in the European Union or they leave, get back on the drachma, it's just not good for the Greek people. They're going to really have to face more austerity. Part of the reason that Greek is really having these issues is because they have a very poor tax collection system, unlike us here in the United States with the IRS. They're not collecting a lot of the taxes that they're entitled to. And then, of course, on the other end, they're spending way too much than what they take in, too many entitlements. You have the Netherlands and you have Germany, which are very upset at the fact, why should they have to financially pay for people to retire early at 56 in the country of Greece when they're retiring much later in those countries? You also have a difference of philosophy because of the types of countries where Greece has, over the years, been, you know, one of those countries that has not really paid their debts, has reneged on a lot of their debts. When you look at the culture of Germany, for example, they find it very repulsive to get rid of their debts or not pay their debts. You know, unlike here in the United States, where, you know, anymore, it's kind of seen as a badge of honor. Yep, I filed bankruptcy, clear slate, start all over again. You won't find that kind of situation over in Germany. They look at that almost as a crime to not pay your debts. So a lot of different cultures amongst this whole European Union thing, and certainly we're going to see what happens this weekend.
I was curious, who do they owe the money to?
They owe it to the International Monetary Fund, they owe it to the European Union, they owe it to a lot of the banks that are over there that are holding their debt. 5 years ago, it would have been a very contagious type of situation because the debt was held by all kinds of people and individuals. Now it's mainly held by, you know, the higher-ups and the International Monetary Fund and the European Union. So,
did they buy that debt?
They purchased that debt, yes, to help out the Greeks.
Uh-huh. So they actually bought bad debt in some sense.
In some sense, they did. This is, when you look at this, the main forefront now are the creditors. The creditors don't want to give up any of their debt. They don't want to trim it. They don't. All they're talking about doing right now is extending the debt deadlines instead of, you know, like 10 years. Or, you know, they're going to turn it into 20 or 30 or 40 years. They're talking about reducing interest rates that they owe on it and so forth.
What is the interest rate they're paying?
It depends on the debt.
Because it's a lot of different
stuff. It's a lot of different debt. But one of the main things, you know, collect what you're owed in taxes, mm-hmm. number one, mm-hmm. which helps.
Are you endorsing the IRS?
No, not at all. It's not that.
Wait a minute.
They're just not collecting what's owed to them. They also have a lot of governmental problems because they are a socialistic state and the government wants to run everything, and so therefore they're having a lot of problems with government regulation to expand and to encourage small business growth. They're just not allowing it to happen, mm-hmm. and so therefore they're not getting the growth that they need to get. And this whole talk, you know, the aggravating thing is the whole thing is basically about debt and creditors at this point, not the underlying fundamental problems growth in the country, tax collection, how do we get people back to work. They have a high unemployment rate and so forth. And like anything, I mean, it's just it's political. You know, this whole world runs on a political basis that is just it seems really bizarre when you look at it. And the fact that it's a socialistic experiment that's just not working. You know, Greeks are – that's a socialistic country, and it's just – that experiment does not work. You have to have a capitalistic environment that encourages growth, that encourages entrepreneurship. It just where are most of the jobs created in this country? From small business. And, you know, socialist doesn't work. And, you know, we've got the – left in this country that are trying to instill socialistic regimes in this country, and it doesn't work. In fact, when we come back from the commercial break, I'm going to give you a little story about this and maybe give you a different point of view. So stay with us.
I can hardly wait.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590. With more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And we welcome you back this Saturday morning. We're talking a little bit about Greece and their socialism in their society. Here's an article which is entitled Free Ice Cream. That's a simple lesson of how socialism weaves its way into the fabric of a free society.
I want free ice cream.
Yeah.
I'll wait until I hear the story, though.
Yeah.
I'll be sorry I asked for that ice cream, right?
A teacher from Jennings, Florida, on the Georgia border, wrote the most eye-opening civics lesson I've ever seen while recently teaching in an elementary school. It was the middle of 2008 when the presidential election was really heating up on television screens in American homes. Children were showing an interest. With permission, I decided to try the civics lessons plan in my own classroom. The concept was simple. The class would hold an election for class president. This would help them to understand the process that was going on around them, hopefully reflecting what some parents might be saying at the dining room table. To simplify the process, they would choose their own nominees, no other class being involved. The nominees would discuss why they would like to run for office, and from these classmates, two would be selected, each making a campaign speech, and then the class would vote. We discussed what kinds of characteristics the nominees should have, such as honesty, character, and the ability to get the job done that they promised to do. Well, we got many nominations, and from those came two. Jamie, and Olivia, who were finally picked to run for the mock office. Each would make a speech giving their platform and why they should be elected to represent the class. It was just like the American politics in the summer of 2008. The children had even been encouraged to discuss the class election at home, getting their parents to help select the best candidate. Well, the day of the election was at hand. The class seemed to have done a great job in their selections, excited about the vote. Both candidates were good kids. I thought Jamie might have an advantage because he had lots of parental support. But I had never seen Olivia's mother, so I didn't know how she felt about the process. Well, the day arrived when Jamie and Olivia were to make their speeches. Jamie went first. He had specific ideas on how to make our class a better place. He ended by promising to do his very best. Everyone applauded as he sat down. Now it was Olivia's turn to speak. Her speech was concise and short. She said, "If you will vote for me, I will give you free ice cream." And then she sat down. The class went wild. "Yes, yes, we want free ice cream. We want free ice cream," they shouted. Well, Olivia surely would say more, but she realized quickly that she didn't have to. A class discussion followed. How did Olivia plan to pay for the ice cream? Well, she wasn't sure. Would her parents buy it or would the class pay for it? She didn't know. But the elementary class of children didn't care how the promise was going to be kept. All they were thinking about was free ice cream. Soon Jamie was forgotten and Olivia won the election by a landslide. 1 year later, after the interesting classroom study into electing a leader within a democracy, I think about this as I listen to the new president of the United States. Every time the presidential candidate has spoken, it was like offering free ice cream. In the end, 52% of the American voters had reacted just like the 9-year-old class the summer before. In this case, and with adult voters, they wanted their gas tanks filled with free gas, their mortgages paid, and they didn't care how it was to happen. It was not unlike the discussions we had in the mock election about free ice cream. The other 48% who didn't vote for the new president knew somebody was going to have to buy the cow, take care of it, feed it every day, clean up its daily mess, milk it every morning, and then deliver milk to the place that made the ice cream. No one having to pay anything for all the work since the ice cream was going to be free once made, distributed, and consumed. It's a stark reminder that no government can give anything to anyone free unless it's been stolen from someone else first. Thomas Jefferson, one of the founders of our democracy, had given a stern warning about this. If ever the American voter was to act like a fourth grade class of children who simply wanted free ice cream and didn't care where it came from. The democracy will cease to exist when you take away from those who are willing to work and give to those who would not. And that's a quote directly from Thomas Jefferson.
Wow.
Free ice cream.
I still want free ice cream. Oh, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. And that's what socialism is. Take from some to give to others. Mm-hmm. And that's not a capitalistic society where you get what you work for. Mm-hmm. And with that, we'll be right back after these commercial breaks.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590 with more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And we welcome you back. It is time for the Money Talks Joke of the Week.
It has nothing to do with Greece.
Nothing to do with Greece.
Okay, just that, you know. It seems to be the thing.
An old German shepherd starts chasing rabbits and before long discovers that he's lost. Well, wandering about, he notices a panther heading rapidly in his direction with the intention of having lunch. The old German shepherd thinks, uh-oh, I'm in trouble now. And noticing some bones on the ground close by, he immediately settles down to chew on the bones with his back to the approaching cat. Just as the panther is about to leap, the old German shepherd exclaims loudly, "Boy, that was one delicious panther. I wonder if there are any more around here." Well, hearing this, the young panther halts his attack in mid-strike. A look of terror comes over him, and he slinks away into the trees. "Phew," says the panther, "that was close. That old German shepherd nearly had me." Meanwhile, a squirrel who had been watching the whole scene from a nearby tree figures that he can put his knowledge to good use and trade it for protection from the panther. So off he goes. The squirrel soon catches up with the panther, spills the beans, and strikes a deal for himself with that panther. Well, the young panther is furious at being made a fool of and says, "Here, squirrel, hop on my back and see what's going to happen to that conniving canine." Well, now the old German shepherd sees the panther coming with the squirrel on his back and thinks, "Uh-oh, what am I going to do now?" But instead of running, the dog sits down with his back to the attackers, pretending he hasn't seen them yet. And just when they get close enough to hear, the old German shepherd says, "Where's that squirrel? I sent him off an hour ago to bring me another panther." Yeah, don't mess with old dogs.
Yeah, exactly. He was a clever canine.
Absolutely. Well, we're talking a little bit about socialism as we have Greece in the headlines everywhere. And this article kind of works into our conversation today. It comes from Forbes. And basically, as you know, the mayor of San Francisco signed into effect a minimum wage law. As we've been hearing over the past couple of years, these minimum wage rallies and cities changing the minimum wage and the president talking about raising minimum wage. And here again, it's government involvement in a situation where they should keep their hands out of it. In a free market society, you do not put into place price regulation or income regulation like you are with minimum wage. So what Forbes has done here is they wrote this article, "We are seeing the effects of minimum wage rise in San Francisco," and goes on to talk about what they're seeing already. They use as an example Chipotle restaurants. They're saying that in their survey of 10 Chipotle markets, they found that the company had implemented a price increase because of the need of prices going up. And basically, they raised their steak prices around these 10 markets up 4%, except for San Francisco, where they've raised the prices 14%. And why did they raise them 14%? Because that's about the rise in the minimum wage when they had to go from $10.74 an hour to $12.25 an hour on May the 1st. They'll get to the $15 an hour by 2018. Now, as a fast food industry, as they point out, regularly follows a format of 30% goes to wages, 30% of the revenues go to ingredients, and the other 40% goes to everything else, which is your rents, advertising, capital costs, and of course, anything that's left for profits. What they have pointed out is that when you start to raise the minimum wage, where's the money going to come from? Well, one of the things that you're going to do is you're going to have to get more out of the employees and raise that labor productivity, which means they work more.
We've already been kind of doing that, though, without the wage increase. So how do you explain that then?
Well, this is just one of those things. Okay. You know, when you look at this, you're only limited with so many ingredients. Mm-hmm. Number one, you have to raise the productivity. Also, when you look at this, if the cost becomes too prohibitive, then they go ahead and they automate the process. So there again, goodbye jobs, because mm-hmm. now the process is automated. So what they're also looking at is if you have to raise the wage of the employee, then you also have to raise the food prices mm-hmm. because they're left with, in most cases, these companies less than a 5% profit. So if you're raising, in this case, the first minimum wage increase went up 14%, if you don't do anything else, you're going to end up in the red and lose money. You can't do that. So therefore, you have less employees that are going to be working. Those employees that are left working are going to have to work more, in many cases, fill in the gap of the people that left. You raise prices, and the next thing you know is you're running into more trouble because of the fact that the math just doesn't work. And here they are. The bottom line in what the article concludes is that, as they've been saying all along, a rise in the minimum wage really does destroy jobs. I wish that all of these pro people would look at this and figure it out and understand how it works. All they keep it, they're getting on their soapboxes and saying people deserve more money. I heard somebody say, you know, if you work 40 hours a week, you shouldn't live in poverty. Well, you know, number one, you know, what's your definition of poverty? Our poor in this country are the richest poor in the world. You know, they have homes, cars, cell phones, big screen TVs, internet, cable TV. I mean, that's our poor in this country.
I actually work with an organization that helps children that end up in foster care or don't have parents, or sometimes they end up homeless. Some of those kids actually do not have even a home, and they don't have shoes. They'll come in and they're looking for help. They don't have coats in the middle of the winter, so they're not not all of the poor people in the United States.
Right,
I'm homeless people that don't have anything.
Not trying to generalize because. Yeah. I get very upset at the fact that the money that the government wastes, particularly in foreign countries where that money could be used here domestically to take care of our own people. Mm-hmm. What I'm looking at is the fact that government thinks that they can just throw money at a situation or demand that people take care of this problem and it's going to be solved. And it's not. First of all, even in a socialistic country, I don't care where you are, there will always be people that have less than others. I don't care what you do. Nobody.
They do say if you gave, you took just random people and you gave them all $1 million, for example, and then there'd be some people that would turn that $1 million into $1 billion, and there's some people that would spend it all and it would be gone, and there's some people somewhere in the middle.
Right.
But they all start out the same.
Right.
And it depends on your mindset. Did you think that's an argument, though, for getting rid of minimum wage at all? Because we do actually set a minimum wage. And I think some people, I've seen this, where they assume that that is a living wage. And they just go, just pay a minimum wage, you know, like as though somebody had figured out that that's a good thing to do. And they don't really do the research on it.
No. And there's many people out there. Economists and professionals and so forth, that in a true capitalistic society, you should have no minimum wage.
Mm-hmm.
You pay for what the person is worth. Here's what I'm getting at. Here's an example. They keep talking about the poor, generically speaking, the mm-hmm. poor, and let's bring them up and let's get them into the middle class and so forth. Well, what you're doing is, in essence, we'll go back to that story, they're taking from somebody, stealing from somebody to give to the poor. Mm-hmm. The poor have the greatest opportunity in this country of anywhere in the world. They can get free education, but do they take advantage of it? If you get your free education and you don't have to pay a penny for that education, then you can get a better job that pays a much higher wage, mm-hmm. much higher than minimum wage in many cases. Well, they're not even taking advantage of it. And so here we are.
Up to high school, right?
No. College. You can get free college education. If you fall within the poverty range, and depending on where you are in that range, you can get a free education in this country. And they're not taking advantage of that free opportunity. Instead, what they want is just to have the government step in and say, okay, instead of $8, $9 an hour, now you're going to make $15 an hour. They want to do it without the work.
Okay, so I always hear about student loans. So apparently there's people that don't have
student loans. Student loans are the middle class people that are getting the raw end of this deal.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
If you
make so much money in this country, you don't get free education, and therefore you get a lot of middle class people that can't afford to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And so those that are going to try and make this work go and get the student loans, and then they're handicapped from the day that they graduate because they're burdened with all these student loans.
Yeah.
Whereas our government steps in and say, okay, if you fall within these income limits, you get a free education.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's two philosophies in this country. The first being that we all get the same, we all are at the same starting point, and we get the same treatment, and we all have the same opportunity. There's the other half of the country that feels that we should all end up the same at the finish line. And I disagree with that wholeheartedly, because there are people that want to go out there and work hard. They'll get an education. They'll work 60 hours a week if they have to. They're going to try and make something of their life. Those people need rewarded. There's other people that they just want to mosey along, do the minimum that they need to do to provide a subsistence living for themselves. And what they want is they want freebies from the government.
The ant and the grasshopper.
Exactly. Absolutely. And in fact, there's a great story that goes along with that one of these days I'll have to read on air.
Oh, you do that. The good stories, yeah. We look forward
to that. But that's exactly it. And so that's where the debate comes in this country between capitalism and socialism. And it seems that right now there's this big divide and that you have the left that want a socialistic environment and where everybody is the same. I don't believe in that. I believe in a capitalistic free market society. You work hard, you get rewarded for it. Those that choose not to, that's their own choice. Mm-hmm. Also, too, what you find in a very true capitalistic society is that the majority of those that have wealth are very willing to give that money, the excess money, to charitable organizations and programs and so forth. That's where most of that money comes from those that have done well. It's also in a free market society. It's those entrepreneurs that are producing most of the jobs in this country, too. Unlike places like Greece, where entrepreneurs just can't get anywhere because the government is so restrictive. We talked last week. Mm-hmm. Lady owns a small bookstore, wants to sell coffee. 2 years to get a license to sell coffee, still can't get that license. I mean, there's no growth. You have to have growth. That, in my opinion, because of the administration that's currently in place, is the reason why we can't get out of our own way and why we can't get better than 2.5% growth in this country is because of the massive amount of regulation that's been put into place. I mean, just look at last year alone, how much regulation has been put on American business in this country. It's just shameful.
Well, even on an individual level, the tax code is crazy.
Absolutely, and they need to fix that.
As a person who probably I'm living on the edge of either lower middle class or poor myself right now, I pay taxes like crazy.
Yeah,
and I think really they're not just why me? If I got to keep all the money that I made, I would actually be doing all right. Just saying.
Yeah. The government knows better, though. They're smarter than us, and they know where it goes. Yeah. So that's what. But anyway, let's go ahead and get to the phone lines for the Money Talks quiz of the week. 330-370-1590. I'm going to ask you three multiple choice questions. Be our contestant. You win breakfast at Bob Evans automatically. 330-370-1590. We're going to take caller number 4 today. We'll be right back.
Now back to Professor Money, Richard Peterson of Capital Financial Group. Available online at ProfessorMoney.com and taking your calls at 330-370-1590. With more of Money Talks on 1590 WAKR.
And we welcome you back. It is time for the Money Talks quiz of the week. And Sandy, who's our contestant this week?
We have Eva on the line. Hi, Eva. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Eva?
Okay. It's a nice, beautiful, sunny morning.
Isn't it?
Wow. That's unusual.
You've had some yes. serious coffee this morning already, haven't you?
Oh, me?
Yes.
No.
No?
Well, that'll be my next thing.
Okay.
All right, Eva. Let's go ahead and let's see how we do in these questions today.
Okay.
My first question for you. I was watching something the other night, and I thought, this is a very interesting information because I did not even know myself, I'll have to admit it. But I'm going to ask you, how many signatures are on the Declaration of Independence?
Oh.
Are there 35, 56, or 63? How many signatures are on the Declaration of Independence?
Oh, no. You know what? I just read that the other day. 35.
Oh, you'd be missing a few. There's 56 signatures that are on the Declaration of Independence. I found that very interesting because it's just one of those tidbits. Even I didn't know over all these years. It's like, we need to share that. So
yes. And it was more than the 13 colonies. It was a lot more people.
Yes. Yeah. On Monday and Tuesday of this past week, Eva, WTI, or the West Texas Intermediate oil, dropped by how much in those 2 days? 7%, 9%, or 11%? How much did, on Monday and Tuesday of this past week, did WTI, West Texas Intermediate oil, drop during those 2 days? 7%, 9%, or 11%?
Well, I'm going to take a guess on that one. I'm going to say 9%.
Actually, it dropped by 11% those 2 days.
Wow.
Yeah. In fact, on Tuesday, it had dropped more than 8% that day. And a lot of this had to do with China at that particular point in time, and that's why we were seeing oil drop. And my last question for you, what vehicle does principal come out first? Normally, interest comes out first, but what vehicle of the following does principal come out first? Would that be a variable annuity, a Roth IRA, or a simple IRA? Which one does principal come out first? Variable annuity,
yeah.
A Roth IRA, or a simple IRA?
Principal come out first. I'm thinking maybe the variable.
No.
Oh man, I really did bad today.
It's the Roth IRA. The Roth IRA is the only vehicle out there in which principal comes out first. So it really has a lot of uses, and that's one of the things that made it such a very interesting investment vehicle. Because if you take money out, your principal comes out first, interest comes out last. So, Eva.
I know.
The good news is, Eva, that everybody's a winner.
I really was going to say Roth. I really was, and I should have. I just should have.
Well, like they say, you know, the first thing that pops in your mind is usually right more times than not. So something to always remember. But, hey, we're still going to send you out your card for breakfast to Bob Evans, and you still have a beautiful day ahead of you here.
Yes, I do. Okay, well, listen, thanks, you guys. You have a nice day, too.
You too.
Thanks, Eva.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
I actually got that Roth IRA was the one that I actually got right. The other ones, not so much.
The Roth has a lot going for it that a lot of people don't understand all the facets that are attached to the Roth. For example, you know, anybody contributing to an IRA, particularly younger, 20, 30, 40-year-olds, you know, the typical traditional IRA is you can't touch the money till you're 59 and a half. You get a 10% penalty. You have to start taking the money out at 70 and a half. The same rules apply to a 401k, a 403b. A Roth, though, is different in that if you've been contributing for 10 years, you're now 38 years old, for example, need an emergency comes up, need some money, you can take money out of that Roth. There's no 10% penalty as long as all you're taking out is the money that you've put in, the principal. Mm-hmm. And so it can be used in a state of emergency. It shouldn't. You don't want to. Yeah. But if you have to, you can take it out.
What qualifies as a state of emergency?
Well,
is this like a subjective in terms of you decide what the
subjective,
emergency is?
Subjective, yes. Okay. This is not a rule or anything else. Okay. You are allowed to take all 100% of your principal out anytime you want without any type of government
penalty.
Like
I want to go on a vacation in the Bahamas, it actually could qualify, although it shouldn't qualify according to someone like yourself who does finances.
Right.
But if somebody, you know, so it doesn't, but they're not going to step in and tell you what's, like the government's not going to tell you what you can spend your money on.
Exactly. Now, there are some stipulations with the traditional, for example, if you are buying you're a first-time home buyer, you know, you can take these out without having to pay that 10% penalty. You still have to include it in your income, but you don't have to pay a penalty. If you have medical expenses, if you have a hardship case, you know, those type of things, those are allowed under the traditional. Roth, you don't even have to be concerned about that. You can take them out. Now, there are some stipulations with the Roth, for example, if you do get into some of the interest before you're 59 and a half, such as first-time home buyer and that type of thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the Roth is a very interesting vehicle.
It's basically more flexible.
Yes. Well, anyway, another show has come to an end. It's been a great pleasure to share the past hour with you. We always welcome the opportunity at Capital Financial Group to work with you as your personal financial advisor. Let us help you to eliminate the worry that comes with retirement planning, how to invest, where to invest, your financial plans, and so forth. Give us a call. Our number is 330-668-6991. That's 330-668-6991. Thanks for having us in today. We'll see you next Saturday at 7 right here on Money Talks. Have a great week.
This has been Money Talks with Richard Peterson, President of Capital Financial Group. This program is informational only and should not replace a financial consultation before investing your money. Registered financial advisors are key toward a balanced and responsible financial policy. This has been a paid program. 1590 WAKR and its parent company, the Rubber City Radio Group, are not responsible for its content.